Morning. May it please the court. My name is Ron Sterney. I represent the plaintiff appellant Mark Thompson. Seated with me at table is my co-counsel, Laura Bellows. Your Honors, this is a case in which the district court deviated from the rules governing motions to dismiss and permitted the state to accomplish that which it could not accomplish at any stage of this case, namely, to take everything the state says is true without giving the plaintiff an opportunity to respond or contest the validity of those statements. Second, on a more disturbing level, the district court's ruling has given the state the ability in this case and a blueprint in future cases to politicize a position which requires impartiality and not obedience to any political party. Consequently, this ruling will ultimately lead to the erosion of confidence in the administrative justice system. The district court misused the position description that we attached to the pleadings.
Other than Mr. Thompson's own personal experiences in the job, what other evidence do you have to establish the functions of the chief ALJ job?
Other than Mr. Thompson's experiences contained in his affidavit,
mm-hmm.
The only other evidence in this case, given at the stage that it was left at, is the pleadings contained in the complaint itself and the section of the position description which we referred to in the allegations, which were the requirements for the job. And the bottom line there was the ability to exercise judicial impartiality.
When did he have to exercise this judicial impartiality?
When he would hear cases on behalf of the department, all of which were contested.
He heard cases and made rulings?
He heard cases and he would make a finding of fact and then apply the law to those facts and submit it to the relevant committee that governed the license at issue.
And their decision was the one that counted?
That's right, Judge. That decision went to the director.
Why did you wait until the third amended complaint to address the accuracy of the job description? I mean, you were on notice that it was an issue earlier.
Well, Judge, again, we presume that the court will resolve all inferences or conflicts in our favor. And within the section of the job description that the district court delved into, we pulled out the sections that we felt reflected our position and conflicted the position of the defendants. There being a conflict, the resolution should have been in favor of the plaintiff and not the defendants. We attached the position description for two reasons. Number one, to show the rank of the plaintiff in his job as chief administrative law judge, and then show the rank that they demoted him to.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because are you essentially arguing that the position description is accurate for determining rank and position requirements, but not for determining the position function?
The short answer to that question is yes. However, the pleadings are what controls.
On what basis would you draw that distinction?
Well, what we were doing, Your Honor, is in good faith, this is what happened, this was my rank, this is what I was demoted to, and you see in this document, this part of the document is true, that's what I'm vouching for in this complaint. And we did not cite to any section of the what's described as the position essential functions. We only said, this is our rank prior to demotion, this was the rank that they demoted me to, and second, the disparity in the qualifications required for the job. The district court to do this relied on PLEVA, but this is not a PLEVA case. In PLEVA, this court had the job description as it was laid out in a state statute and a city ordinance. This position description is not promulgated pursuant to any statute or any ordinance or even any regulation.
Does that help or hinder you?
I think it helps, Judge. I mean, basically, in the cases in which the defendants rely on, most of the time you have a state statute which outlays the job description. This document really has no value toward the making the decision whether or not Mr. Thompson is a policymaker and what inherent job functions he has. In all of those cases, you had a state statute, and statutes can be taken notice of by the court. This is a document that, if we were at any other stage of the pleadings, they would have to lay a foundation and bring in people to tell us who created it, for what purpose, and what they knew about the job description. That is what was really at issue on this part of the case. We didn't have an opportunity to even contest any of these statements. This position description essentially is Rutan proofing. It's created with these sections in mind to keep litigants from getting past the motion to dismiss phase. The defendant's entire case rests on this, that because CMS promulgated this document that says you, and sprinkled it liberally with the word policy making and creating fictitious duties that the plaintiff never was given and never exercised, this is to keep people out of court and these cases going forward. We dispute this job description, and there are doubts as to its veracity. And based on the record as it stands, I'm going to give you two examples as to how. The regulations that were promulgated pursuant to the Administrative Procedures Act and are as good as law say that the hearing officer, or ALJ, the terms are used interchangeably, hears these facts and gives it to the committee. This runs contrary to what this position description says. You can't find a regulation that says that he's a policymaker, that he has budgetary responsibilities, that he has any of these responsibilities that the district court relied on. Not in the regs. There are only two regs that talk about this. One was impartiality, and the other set talk about giving it to the committees for decision for the director. The second example I'm going to give you is in relation to the qualifications necessary for these jobs. In the chief administrative law judge job description, it says judicial impartiality, and it needs a law license, and it says you need to have practiced in these areas. Thompson satisfied those requirements, and we pled that he satisfied those requirements. In the position description for Chief of Enforcement Administration, it has a number of requirements, most of which Thompson doesn't satisfy. If these things are the absolute truth, then how come they sent him to a position that he didn't qualify for? They can't have it both ways. Either it is the truth or it isn't. There was sufficient doubt as to the veracity of these statements in there that the district court should not have resolved the inferences drawn from this document in their favor.
Mr. Turney, is there any difference in responsibilities, or what are the differences between an ALJ and a chief ALJ?
Well, Judge, based on the record, the only difference was that the chief ALJ assigns the cases and divvies them up. That's what it is as far as we know right now. That's what my client did. He divvied them up, he acted as a hearing officer, so there was that one finite distinction. And you have all these other statements.
So he was a hearing officer like the others are hearing officers.
Yes, Your Honor.
Except that he had the assignment power as an intake individual?
Well, not as an intake individual, but I guess as the cases come in, he would just assign them out so that each hearing officer had an equal amount of cases.
So when he made a recommendation to the committee, in his hearing officer function, is the same, he's acting as the same as any of the other ALJs?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Now, as to the requirements for to be a regular ALJ as opposed to a chief ALJ, is there any difference in those regs or requirements?
I don't know, Judge. I didn't look at any other information other than the regulations, but the regulations don't make that distinction. There's a definition regulation that says administrative law judge is really the same thing as hearing officer, and then the only other regulation that is in the record that I know of says that the administrative law judge or hearing officer hears the facts, prepares a finding of fact, gives it to the committee with his conclusions, and then they adopt, modify, recommend, and give it to the director.
Is there a recommendation contained in those findings, or is it just findings, as you will?
I believe that it contains the findings of fact and then the hearing officer's application of the law to those facts. I mean, what we're talking about here are professionals' licenses. I mean, doctors, dentists, architects. And the rules are fairly simple, you know. Doctors don't fee split with non-doctors. Facts come in, either you did or you didn't, and then it goes to the committee. In Lahorn, this court said that the district court is not to use the state's label making as a decisive factor in determining whether someone's got what a person's inherent job functions are. And that's precisely what the district court did. At this time, I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Sterney.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Coleman?
May it please the court. I represent Director Sherman. Mr. Gauza represents the private parties who were sued. I have 10 minutes to address the constitutional issues. He's going to address the state action issues. And let me do it the way Mr. Sterney did. He said there were two major issues here: the process that was followed in the district court, and secondly, what he called the politicization of the ALJ process. In terms of the process followed in the district court, I think it's very important for your honors to look at the record. The complaint was filed, first complaint, in August of 2001. We filed our motion to dismiss within a couple of weeks on August 21st, and in our motion, we say that they made a fatal mistake by attaching the job description to their complaint. And we go through in our memorandum of support, in support of that motion, in great detail, the policymaking responsibilities that are set forth in the job description.
Why should we consider the job description as dispositive on the issue at this early stage when the parties haven't been given an opportunity to engage in discovery, or even to provide any other evidence refuting that description?
I was going to try to answer exactly that question, Your Honor. Because on September 13th of 2001, and it's record reference 25, the plaintiff did have an opportunity to respond to the motion to dismiss and to respond to the job description. And instead, Your Honor, of talking about what you're saying, instead of saying, oh, that job description, it's no good, or, gee, we need discovery on the job description, it's no good, let me read to you what they said at page 8 of their brief to Judge Conlon. And I quote, "In fact, a review of the position description belies defendant's argument," our argument that it was a policymaking position. "The position description states unequivocally that the chief hearing officer's primary function is hearing disciplinary proceedings against license holders. The descriptions which defendant emphasized with italics in their motion are not policy-making functions as contemplated by the Supreme Court cases of Branty." So they didn't say, Judge Rovner, oh, this is not a policy, this is not an apt description of the job. They said, here's the job description, and it's not policy making. Judge Conlon then ruled on that motion, and they come before you and say, oh, we were sandbagged. We didn't have a chance.
Are you saying that they had the opportunity to introduce testimony that the functions listed do not in fact involve policy-making functions? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And indeed, they tried to do that.
They had no opportunity to engage in discovery. This is a motion to dismiss. We're not at summary judgment here.
Your Honor, the man filed an affidavit after Judge Conlon ruled saying the job description was wrong. That's not what I did. He had the same opportunity in August and September when he was responding to the motion, and instead he permitted the district court to go ahead and make a ruling, and then after he loses, he says, oh, never mind, forget about the job description, that was wrong. And I respectfully submit to each of the three of you who had the benefit and pleasure of serving as district court judges, that's just not the way the process ought to work. They had an opportunity to respond to the motion to dismiss. They could have submitted an affidavit. They could have tried to question the job description. And instead, they permitted the district court judge to rule on the case based on that job description. What I also say to you is that this job, no matter what you call it, no matter how you slice it, is exempt from Rutan. And let me do it by way of hypothetical, which is not so hypothetical. Starting now, Rod Blagojevich and Jim Ryan are running for governor of the state of Illinois. They started already. At page 25 of Mr. Thompson's brief, he says that he has the power as chief administrative law judge to remove doctors from practicing medicine. I think he overstated it. But assume that he has the power to recommend that doctors be removed to the committee and the director. If Congressman Blagojevich and Attorney General Ryan want to campaign for the next 6 months, it's only a few months less than that, I guess, and they want to say, you know what, the Department of Professional Regulation stinks. They are not tough enough on doctors. We have doctors writing prescriptions in the state who get a slap on the wrist. They don't punish these people. My policy, if I'm the governor of the state of Illinois, is I'm going to put a director in there and a chief administrative law judge, and we are not going to tolerate doctors who abuse patients and abuse the system. And I don't think anyone would contest the ability of the new governor to do that. And indeed, there's a chief administrative law judge in the position right now. When there's a new governor in place next year, that new governor will have every right to say to his or her director, I don't want those people anymore. I want a different policy.
Let's talk about the policy as it was at the time of this case and not what it might be in 6 months. Are you saying that it isn't possible that the chief ALJ position involves both judicial and policy-making functions? It isn't possible.
Oh, it has both. And this court, in an opinion written by Judge Easterbrook about 12 years ago, talked about how judges do make policy. I'm glad I'm not here today to contemplate how circuit court judges run for re-election or get slated if they're not policymakers, and whether a circuit court judge can sue the slating committee for not re-slating them. There are a whole bunch of very interesting issues. But here you have a chief administrative law judge. He's not part of the judicial branch. He's part of the executive branch. There's no dispute about that. He reports directly to the director. That's stated in their complaint.
Is the job description dispositive and incontrovertible?
I think in this case it is, Your Honor, because you would have to find that Judge Conlon abused her discretion after all of this briefing when she wouldn't let them file a third amended complaint. So yes, it is in this case incontrovertible. And you know what it's similar to? This court decided the Warzon case. It's at 60 F3rd 1234. In that case, the plaintiff was the controller for Milwaukee County, and she attached to her complaint a memorandum that she wrote describing her job functions. This wasn't based on a statutory description of the job. The Seventh Circuit ruled that the district court was correct in dismissing the complaint because the plaintiff had attached a memorandum in which she talked about her important policymaking position. I don't think anyone can question that the chief administrative law judge, as defined in the job description or by any other description you want to give it, Judge Rovner, is in a policymaking position. They can recommend zero tolerance in terms of doctors and dentists and others. They can recommend censures. They are in extremely important public policy positions.
You're saying, are you, Mr. Goldman, that it would be entirely appropriate, for example, for a director to talk to a chief administrative law judge about tightening such a policy or changing such a policy?
Absolutely.
And by that very nature, while there is the quasi-judicial function, it is, if not trumped, merged so heavily with policy that there's enough of a policy thing to attempt it.
It's chock full of policy. They're involved in budgetary prioritizing, which hearings are going to be heard. It's public knowledge. Criticisms of the department have been very severe for having a backlog of cases. Well, who's going to decide which cases to hold the hearings on first? Are we going to do the barbers or are we going to do the doctors? How many doctors? How many barbers? When does this happen? This position, respectfully, is as policy-making a position, as inherently political in nature, as any position you've seen in this court, certainly more than deputy attorney generals, Americano, certainly more than deputy sheriffs, the Upton case, the controller in Milwaukee. This fits in with a whole host of decisions of this court. I need to give my time to my colleague. It's been a great honor to be before the three of you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Mr. Gauza?
If you may please the court, my name is Ted Gauza. I'm here on behalf of the individuals Bob Dudich and Walter Dudich. And I'm going to address an issue of state action, but before I do, I just want to do one follow-up, which Mr. Coleman may have not addressed. But Mr. Thompson, the plaintiff here, is an attorney who, in his pleadings, acknowledged that he was for close to two decades in political life. He applied for, as he pled, and accepted a position which, on its face, stated it was a Rutan exempt. He knowingly took this job position. Now he wants, and what he asked the courts to do, is save him from his own decision. The point I'd also like to emphasize is a secondary thing, which, aside from how the state gets treated, is how the individuals here, Bob Dudich and Walter Dudich, get treated. For purposes of 42 U.S.C. 1983, you need to show that there's some state action. The pleadings fail completely. The only basis that they have for reaching to them is by putting a label on them. There is never, and there was no allegation in any of the complaints at any time, and there cannot be, that either Bob Dudich is a local township supervisor or his brother, Walter Dudich, who happened to be a state legislator, could have any influence to direct a cabinet official to transfer, promote, hire, fire, or in any manner, direct and affect employment of one Mark Thompson. There's no allegation of that. The only said is upon information and belief, we believe they may have done something.
Well, maybe if they'd gotten a little discovery here, maybe if, it hadn't gone out on a motion to dismiss, maybe if there was a summary judgment that occurred, maybe they might have.
Well, assuming for a moment that they did, both Dudiches are in the same situation as in this court found in Victory versus Jones, where Republican, in that case, party officials make recommendations regarding the hiring of certain individuals for other positions. What this court said is, that's like anybody else, you, me, or anybody else off the street, coming up and saying, I'd like to have him hired, I'd like to have him transferred, I'd like to have him promoted. It doesn't change the fact you still have to have some ability to do it. There has to be some direct ability to do it. Otherwise, every state legislator who gets up in a political assembly and says, I don't like what this cabinet official is doing or that official is doing, suddenly has to be, and if the governor acts on it, that's state action? No, it's political speech. Victory versus Jones, which the Seventh Circuit addressed a few years ago, said you need to look at whether they have the ability to actually directly influence it. The only evidence or the only pleadings they ever said here is that Bob Dudich has a title. He's Maine Township Supervisor, a local township official. Walter Dudich is his brother and happens to be in the state legislature. That's it. Period. Not that they ever supervised or Mr. Thompson. They could hire, fire, or affect him directly. They were not in any position to do so. They have no authority over the cabinet or the director of that department, the only Department of Employment Security, directly, other than as any other citizen would to make a complaint, object, or voice an opinion about any...
Well, not quite like any other citizen. Right. Not quite like any other citizen. Some people are among equals are more equal than others, but, you know...
That may be true, Your Honor.
And as a, are you really arguing that as a matter of law, as a matter of law, discovery might not have shown any of those?
As a matter of law, it doesn't matter what discovery showed. If they had been sitting there, and let's just take it hypothetically, that they were saying, transfer him, fire him. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing as if I stood up and said, transfer him, fire him. It doesn't make a difference legally because they are not his director, they're not his supervisor, and they're not people who have any authority over that director or supervisor.
So they might have had another cause of action, but not this cause of action? What is your argument?
I don't know if they may have had another cause of action.
Slander and libel, perhaps.
Perhaps, if they could reach it. Yeah, but it's hypothetical. But if we reach the point where anybody who has any type of title or position makes any comment...
Or recommend somebody for a job?
Yeah.
I tremble.
Recommend, and that's the exact holding of Victory versus Jones. And no matter how they go about it, they can't get away from it. I believe my time's up. If the court has any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galson. Mr. Sterney?
Judge, when I was in law school, you came to my appellate courts class and you said, this is the Seventh Circuit, and in this circuit, we play by the rules.
By gummies, your professor was dead right on the money with that one.
It was Judge Flom who came in and told us that. And by God, I
was
play
it?
By the rules. Yes, he's a...
I withdraw my statement.
We were faced with a motion to dismiss. And the rule is, you take everything as true as the plaintiff has pled it. That's the rule I work under. Mr. Coleman came up here and said, I should have filed an affidavit. That's not the way it works. That's motion for summary judgment. I was not going to file an affidavit. I was not going to put in all these extraneous facts as the Dudich defendants did, because that's not relevant. Hypothetical or not, the rule is, you take it as true. The truth is what I said in the complaint and what Mark Thompson pled.
Attorney, what do you say, though, to Mr. Coleman's argument about how heavily infused in policy this position is? You think that's something we should wait for another day to examine?
Absolutely. I think that we need evidence, and we're entitled to evidence to dispute that. But let me point out that under the regulation, Mr. Coleman hypothesized that the director's got to get tough on these doctors and so on and so forth. And if he's got an administrative law judge that is easy, he needs to be able to fire him. No. The recommendation comes to the director. The director, if Mark Thompson could let this doctor go, the director could say, no, I am going to take away his license, and vice versa. Also, it is the director who initiates the complaints. It is the contested hearing. It is the department who initiates these complaints. That is policymaking. Not Mark Thompson's position. Mr. Coleman then said it's a purely executive function. It is not. Again,
I think he acknowledged there was a judicial component.
Right. I mean, this court and courts around the country do give immunities to administrative law judges based on their official job duties. It's based on this presumption that when you go before an administrative law judge, he will be impartial. I mean, the circuit courts rely on this when you take an administrative law judge's decision up on review. I mean, there are different administrative agencies, both state and federal, and how they work. In this case, there is an intermediary level that makes the ultimate decision, and there are certain aspects of this process that need to be exempt from...
Did your client hold an elective political job?
He did, Your Honor. He was a supervisor of Maine Township. and that is what gave rise to the facts of this complaint. In that position, he fired a lazy employee who was spending his days at home instead of working, and that's why the defendants got involved.
Does your client assume that he got the job because of his political position or in spite of his political position?
No assumptions to that effect, Judge. I can't make
You couldn't those. Guess one?
I could guess quite a bit.
Attaboy.
But, again, this is not that situation, live by the sword, die by the sword. This is a term position.
Well, but finding politics creeping into the political system has never shocked me. And it did, so I wondered whether it shocked you.
Mr. Coleman also pointed to this war zone decision. Well, there, the plaintiff herself wrote it. I mean, if you strictly took that on an evidentiary level, it's an admission against a party opponent. So it's different. As to the Dudich defendants, their argument that these were not state actors, these individuals were acting under color of law. They had positions that they would have been subject to suit. Your Honors, my time is up. May I briefly...
Wait, why don't you finish that thought, though, Mr. Stoney, about the state actor.
One Dudich defendant was a senator. The other one was a township supervisor.
Yeah.
They could have both been sued under 1983. And believe me...
For doing what? Could they fire him?
Well, they colluded. And under Vickery...
Who could they fire him? How can they... Who did they collude with to fire him?
They colluded with the governor and Director Sherman.
They had the power to force the governor, compel him to do what he did.
Your Honor, at the time that this was going on, there was a state budget.
You mean they had influence because of their political position?
Absolutely.
That's not state action. If I write a letter to the state's U.S. attorney suggesting that it would be wonderful if he hired one of my former clerks, am I now engaged in political activity?
No, Judge, that's different.
Why?
Because here it was a state senator who used his influence to get the Mark Thompson.
What do you think that the U.S. attorney is going to ignore the fact that on my letterhead it says Judge, United States Court of Appeals?
I'm gonna flip your statement.
I'll withdraw the question.
Okay. In conclusion, Your Honor, we're asking this court to reverse and remand. Let us get discovery. Let us get evidence to show that this position description is false, or at least show what the inherent job duties was, to show the treachery of the defendants, and to make them prove up what they need to prove up, the compelling interest they have in violating my client's constitutional rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney. Mr. Gauza, Coleman, additional counsel.